You know, the website YouTube was built one video at a time using a technology developed by a group of programmers led by a woman.
Sarah Allen was the lone woman on the team that created Flash Video, which is the main digital streaming technology in use right now. Only about 20% of all programmers are female, so Allen's experiences as the only woman in the room is not unusual in that field.
For our series, The Changing Lives of Women, NPR's Laura Seidel reports on how Allen thrived and how she's trying to encourage more women to follow in her footsteps.
Stand up.
Sarah Allen has a lot of energy and she likes to move quickly. That's why she's got a special tactic for the morning meeting at her San Francisco company.
You stand up to keep the meeting short.
After a quick round in which her nearly 20 employees tell her what they're doing that day, the meeting is over.
Okay, anything else? Go team!
Yay! Allen founded Blazing Cloud a little over 4 years ago. It does design and development of software for mobile devices. Allen is a dynamic 45-year-old with long hair offset by streaks of light purple. She wonders how I managed to miss the dinosaur in the entryway.
So on the way out, you'll have to check out the giant inflatable dinosaur. Her name is Tyra. Not very original, but we love her anyhow.
Allen's company, Blazing Cloud, is a mix of programmers and designers. They work with entrepreneurs and help them take an idea and turn it into software that works.
Hello. Surprise, surprise.
We've been thinking about you, too.
Today's first client is Esty Solomon Gray, the founder of a company called Mind, with two M's and two D's. Solomon Gray is trying to create a sort of next-generation calendar that better reflects people's priorities. Allen and her team help Solomon Gray visualize what her software might look like.
The place we want to be, which you got really quickly, is this. We're potentiating your mind.
Yeah, you're not some of the
digital artifacts. Right, this is not treating you as a big data problem, right?
Allen will then help Solomon Gray design and build the product.
Her vision is maybe 2 years out. And our task is, how do we come up with the thing that we might build in a few months that would get this started?
Allen's experience as a programmer and developer is part of what got her this job. But Solomon Gray says Blazing Cloud also has a diverse team, and she didn't find that elsewhere.
I was really surprised by how many design, let alone development firms, had women as window dressing.
What do you mean by that?
One woman on the team, and it turns out she's the salesperson. And after a few of those, I started to get really upset.
Allen nods her head as she listens to Solomon Gray. She's well aware that many firms claim they can't find qualified women programmers. They say it's hard since only about 20% of the profession is female. Allen, whose firm is made up equally of men and women, doesn't buy it.
If you're interviewing people for your job and you haven't interviewed a woman, don't hire until you've at least interviewed one woman. And if your recruiter can't get you resumes that are diverse, find another recruiter.
Allen has been the only woman programmer on her team a few times over the more than two decades she's worked in the field. But when I ask her if she's ever experienced sexism, she doesn't want to talk about it in those terms.
I don't think you can be a woman in our society and not experience sexism. So, sure, but that's not the point.
Actually, Allen says being a programmer has been a great career for her as a mom. Allen is married and has a 15-year-old son.
The women that I went to college with who are lawyers or doctors had a much harder time raising a family. They have to be there at certain times. I had an incredible amount of freedom, especially because I worked as a coder when I was a new mom. And then I can work whenever I want, whenever I want.
Allen got interested in computers when she was 12. Her mom was one of the first women to sell the Apple II, and she brought one home. Allen read the manual and taught herself to write simple programs. She says it always seemed like magic to her.
I could wave my hands and I could create this pattern in the machine, and then this thing exists that didn't exist before.
Allen graduated from Brown University in 1990 with a degree in computer science. A few years back, Allen started going to gatherings to learn more about a hot programming language called Ruby on Rails. Twitter was developed with it. Alan got really frustrated when she noticed at one event of 200 people, only six were women. Alan and a friend started their own workshops called Rails Bridge. They were on weekends, and there was childcare.
So we both tweeted about it. She posted to the San Francisco Women on the web. And in less than 24 hours, we had a waiting list. And we have really proven that demand is not a problem. Every single workshop we've ever held has had a waiting list.
Since they began in 2009, the workshops have drawn thousands of women, among them Lily Chilin. Chilin was an art history and opera major in college. A lot of programming workshops felt uncomfortable.
It can be intimidating not to have that context up front that says, we welcome you.
But the Rails Bridge workshops?
It gives you a very focused opportunity to learn something and then also be a part of this network that just wants to help you do whatever you want to do next.
Next for Chilin came from the workshop. She met a woman who hired her as a programmer. Now, Sarah Ellen is also working with minority groups, such as Black Founders, to teach more people Ruby.
If we persist in this notion that the people who should be making software in our world are these people with low social skills who are hard to understand, we're going to miss the boat. Like, we're not going to be able to solve the problems we need to solve if we don't have just lots of people who can know about the rest of the world.
On the wall of Alan's office is a large photo of the ENIAC computer from 1946. It's large, dark. There are two women next to it in bright dresses moving some electrical cords. When a photo of the ENIAC appeared in Life magazine, the women weren't identified.
They thought they were like refrigerator ladies, that they were props to make the machine look more attractive.
Actually, they were early programmers, Esther Gersten and Gloria Ruth Gordon. Alan says the number of women who major in computer science has actually been going down. She hopes that by making women in the field more visible to each other, it will help young women see that there is a path for them in what is one of the fastest-growing professions in the world. Laura Seidel, NPR News, San Francisco.
And there are still many professions where a woman might easily find herself the only woman in the room. We asked NPR's own Nina Totenberg about finding herself in that position.
When have I been the only woman in the room? Are you kidding me? Like the first 25 years of my career or something, or 20? I was always the only woman in the room. Every place I worked, I was the only woman. Now it doesn't happen, but for decades it happened.
Nina got some advice from female Supreme Court justices. You'll find that advice and a place to share your experiences at NPR.org.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Now we're going to meet someone who wants to do something about the shortage of women who pursue careers in technology. Of graduates with computer science degrees, just 18% are women. In the workplace, their numbers aren't much higher. And that's where Marie Clave comes in. As president of Harvey Mudd College, a science and engineering school in Southern California, she has had stunning success getting more women involved in computing. NPR's Wendy Kaufman has her story as part of our series on the changing lives of women.
There aren't many colleges where the president is a renowned mathematician and computer scientist who rides a skateboard around campus, but then most schools don't have Maria Clave.
This is my longboard.
We caught up with her outside the dining hall at Harvey Mudd College.
I started learned skateboard shortly after I got to Mudd. Then I thought, if they can do it, I can do it.
That same determination is driving Clave to change the status quo, crushing the stereotype of computer science as something for antisocial nerds and getting more women to embrace it. She wants them thinking like Mudd senior Xander Schofield.
Computer science is building our world right now, and it should just be inherently obvious to everyone that that's a fantastic place to work and to be.
Clave couldn't agree more. She isn't concerned about filling quotas or being nice to women. Rather, she's deeply troubled that half the population is grossly underrepresented in this all-important field. Women aren't setting the agenda and designing products and services that are shaping our lives. Seated in her modest office on the Claremont, California campus, the 61-year-old Clave recalls her own experience growing up in Canada, where she was a top university math student.
Professors would say to me all the time, why do you want to be a mathematician, Maria? There are no good women mathematicians. And it just really bugged me.
And that helps to explain a career choice she would make decades later. Back in 2005, Clave was thriving as dean of the engineering school at Princeton. But when Harvey Mudd College approached her about becoming the school's president, she was intrigued. She saw an opportunity to change science and engineering education.
We're not attracting and retaining enough talent, and especially in areas like computer science. And I think what I recognized was this might be a place that could actually make a difference with that.
With just 800 students and an emphasis on teaching, Clave believed that Mudd would be an ideal laboratory.
So have people seen this problem? In one direction, there's a lot of chocolate, which is my primary goal. In another direction, there's doom. And I need to figure out...
More than 100 students are paying rapt attention in Colleen Lewis's second semester computer science course, and a lot of them are women. Kate Finley, a student at nearby Scripps College who took the first semester course and is now taking the second, offers this explanation.
A lot of universities have this kind of weed out class. The first class you take is a weed out class, and they are shocked by the fact that they don't get any women at the end, that the only people at the end are the people who have been in computer camp since they were five.
Typically guys. What Harvey Mudd recognized and explicitly addressed were ways to get women interested in comp sci. So students like Finley, who've never been to computer camp, have their own introductory courses. The kids with experience have theirs. Know-it-alls in any section are told to cool it so no one is intimidated. As for the content, Finley says it's designed around problems they can relate to.
They had all these really fun assignments, sound editing Darth Vader's voice. Every single answer on the quizzes was 42 and a reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun.
Finley, who'd planned to study art and psychology, found a new passion in computer science. Along with changes to the introductory courses, Mudd works hard to keep women interested in the field. First-year students attend a giant conference for women in computing. There are research opportunities and coursework which involve solving real problems for major companies. Technology experts like Alan Eustace, a senior vice president at Google, are applauding the initiatives.
I think they're fantastic.
He also cites Mudd's rigorous academics and the critical mass of women studying together.
They also have great female instructors, and I think that makes a big difference. So Harvey Mudd is an example of what I consider a model for the future.
Much of this might sound pretty basic, but the approach is highly unusual in higher education, and the efforts have paid off. At Mudd, about 40% of the computer science majors are women. That's far more than at any other co-ed school. As for the male students here, they seem to appreciate and value having more women in their comp sci courses.
Women and men work through problems very different ways.
That's Luke Mustali-Kelly.
Men will oftentimes just try and pound through a problem. And then one of the women will be, wait, hold on, how about I ask this question? It's like, oh, a question. Oh, that changes things.
Their questions can lead to further exploration and perhaps a more elegant solution. Indeed, technology companies say they want more women because diverse teams often do a better job of solving problems and creating things.
I'm Jess Hester, and when I graduate, I'm going to be working on getting software for spaceships. It's my life dream to eventually go to Mars.
Senior Jess Hester was one of several female computer science students who offered their views on why there were so few women in their field. They bemoaned middle and high school math teachers who didn't engage or inspire. They recounted conversations with adults who told them, men are better at this. And they shared some apprehension about working in a male-dominated environment. Here's how Jess Hester put it.
If you fail, it's not just you. It is you as like a sacrificial lamb for your whole gender. It's just like a bucket of stress that we don't need. But like, I also want little kids to look up and be like, awesome, I want to do that.
And that would be music to Maria Clave's ear. She says, if you can make computer science interesting to women, empower them so they feel they can succeed, and then show them how their work can make a difference in the world,
that's almost enough to change everything.
Right now, Clave is working on a new project, a MOOC, a massive open online computer class aimed at 10th graders. It's just one more way that the president of Harvey Mudd College hopes to get more women at the technology table. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
And you can see Harvey Mudd President Maria Clave on her skateboard, as well as images of some of the young computer scientists she's inspiring. That's at our website, npr.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Studies show the average office worker wastes over one-third of his average day. And we'll talk about what that means as soon as I post this tweet. Renee, would you pick it up here for a moment?
Oh, sorry, Steve. I was just going out for coffee.
No problem. I'm ready now. Ever since the Great Recession, businesses have ruthlessly imposed greater efficiency to maintain profits. Many workplaces do the same work with fewer people.
Yeah, okay. And yet companies still hope for greater productivity, which creates an opportunity for entrepreneurs who promise to deliver, as NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports.
Joe Hrushka is pretty blunt about how much work anyone does in a typical day.
You're not getting 8 hours of productivity out of an employee, even though you may have blinders on and that's what you expect.
Hrushka is founder and CEO of Rescue Time, a software firm that allows users to sign up and see where they're spending their computer time. The data he collects show, at best, a worker is productive about 5 of those hours. I installed Rescue Time on my own computer, then awaited the results with trepidation.
I'm sort of scared about what I'm going to find. Is that uncommon?
That is actually the most common reaction that people have.
With good reason, it turns out. My report said on my best day, I was only 68% productive. Hrushka says mere awareness of where time is spent and wasted improves typical users' productivity by 10%. But productivity isn't just about saving wasted time or eliminating distraction. Increasingly, it means adapting to a workforce that's changing demographically. The advance of tablets and web-based computing makes it possible for more people to work remotely, but that also makes interoffice coordination a greater challenge. Tim Beharin is a technology analyst who says companies, from IBM and HP to smaller startups, are grappling with how to make the workplace more effective.
The tools to make them successful in their productivity is the number one IT project in any company.
On the software side, a firm called Jive designed software that simulates social networking sites by allowing coworkers to share notes or post useful information, making it easier to coordinate on the go. Cora Rodenbusch is a manager at PGI, a conferencing company that uses Jive. She says the software has cut down on the time it takes to get new employees up to speed. Increasingly, the focus for many firms like hers is on improving collaboration, making information sharing quicker, which moves projects forward faster and keeps people more productive.
Someone just says, hey, where's the, corporate holiday schedule or whatever, and someone just says, hey, I just looked at it, here's the link, and they post the link to it and you can go off and get your document.
Rodenbusch says as a teleconferencing company, PGI also thinks about productivity enhancements to its own products. Features that automatically share notes, for example, or keep meetings from droning on.
Is there any way to prevent people who love to hear themselves talk from talking?
Actually, there is. As the meeting host, you have control over lowering people's volume and just muting them altogether. Or if you want to, you can dismiss them from your meeting.
Some employers who take the heavy-handed approach to getting more out of their workers monitor or restrict their computer usage, for example. But Teresa Amabile, a professor at the Harvard Business School, says this kind of punitive approach, constantly pointing out what you're doing wrong, is itself counterproductive. Her research shows that documenting progress on work, no matter how minor, is by far the most effective tool.
Of all the things that happened on people's best days, the single most important was simply making progress on meaningful work. That absolutely dwarfed every other positive thing that happened to people.
Amabile likes a service offered by a startup called I Done This. That prompts users to write down what they accomplished at the end of the day. She says this helps users stay focused on their biggest, most important goals.
And that good inner work life fuels their energy, their motivation, and their emotions to make more progress the next day.
Just staying motivated, she says, is still the best way to get work done. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.